Be good.
Oh, hey, hi, hello there. Welcome to the program. It's your pal, Andrew, bringing you the Monkey Tooth Podcast. I've got a guest today. Her name is Wanda Orme. What a lady. Wanda was the very first person that came to say hello to me at Bombay Beach. I got there around midnight, and she just walked right up to me as I was walking around. This tall, beautiful woman shakes my hand and says, "Hi, I'm Wanda." And it reminded me instantly that Bombay Beach is not the kind of place where one should be shy. I had a great time hanging out with Wanda. She was very inventive and creative and a skilled artist, a philosopher, an academic, just a very thoughtful and cool person to be around. And I was very fortunate that she wanted to be interviewed. Interview is the wrong word for this. She wanted to sit down and talk to me with a microphone in between us. And of course, you know, everybody's busy at this thing, at the Bombay Beach Biennale, and there's a lot going on at night, which keeps you up pretty late. So one of the few times that were available to people was early morning, and Wanda agreed early morning to come and sit down with me. I think she did fine. I think she did great. But afterwards, you know, she said, "Hey, I don't think I represented my art very well," which I can appreciate. That's a thoughtful person who gives a shit about what they're doing. And so she sent me a better explanation of her piece. It's called Akasha. We're going to talk about it in the episode. And I was pleased with what she had to say about it, but I can appreciate why she'd want you to know more and specifically about what the piece meant to her and why she made it. So I'm going to put that in the show notes. She sent me a very thoughtful email that explains it, and I will put that up. You can find that at mtp.dog. You'll see Wanda's beautiful face, and you can search her in the, there's a little search bar. Did you know there's a search bar on my website? Yeah. Type in her name, Wanda, W-A-N-D-A, Orme, O-R-M-E, and go to the show notes. You can find what she's talking about. And yeah, enjoy this episode with her. I certainly did. What a pleasure to know her and to have been in her company for a week and to have experienced the way she makes art and the art that she makes. This is great. What else? I'm heading east on May the 6th. I'm leaving the San Francisco Bay Area. I'll be gone for like 5 weeks traveling across the country, and I'm almost straight shot across I-80, dipping around for about 2 hours to miss Des Moines, Iowa, for reasons that you can find out if you want to read my book, moronbook.com. It's the moron at the end of this book. I explain why I just cannot abide by Des Moines, Iowa. That's not the point. The point is I'll be out there on the road. My wife and my dog will be with me on the second part of it. Yeah, we're going to be out there traveling on the East Coast. I don't know where all we're going to go. But if we happen to be anywhere near you, or you know someone that's interesting anywhere near where we will be, boy, that's a hard thing to say. Yeah, just reach out to us. Let us know. That's mtp.dog/contact. I'll be looking to have more conversations with fun and interesting people. And you can help with that if you want to. All right, I'm going to stop talking because it's not about me here. It's about Wanda, and you're going to be glad that you stuck through this little introduction to hear what Wanda has to say. Be sure to go to the show notes, check out Wanda's website. That's wandaorme.com. I'll put links up to her Instagram. I'll put up a photo of her beautiful piece. Yeah, enjoy this episode with Wanda Orme. Until next time, hope you're doing fun and interesting things. Adios.
Is that the fridge?
That's my fridge. It's not, although there's not much left in it. We've been here long enough where I've eaten all my food.
Yeah.
And you're free to put your feet on that pillow if you like.
Oh,
just make yourself at home in so far as you can. If home were a place where you just had a microphone in front of you all the time. Hello.
Hello.
So you and I have been... you've been here how long in Bombay?
A week.
You've been here? Oh, yeah. So you got here right before I did.
Yeah.
Boy, you seemed like you'd been here for a while.
I think I have.
Yeah.
In a different way.
Yeah. I got in, what, Sunday night at around midnight, and you've just been busy kind of nonstop ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you set out to do this time.
The biggest thing was just to be here. That was the thing
that's the project.
The participation and being here. But I actually had two projects that I've done, one of which is a sculpture called Akasha, which I came out and built in 2020. But the Biennale was then cancelled because of COVID. And that sculpture has been in storage, sleeping under one of Tao's trailers by the Institute since then for 4 years, which has been a really prolonged kind of strange, slightly, it was a bit sad really that it wasn't up. So I'm very, very happy to get it back, get back and get that erected outside the Poetry House. And then the second thing is a video installation, an audio video installation called Conversations Between Water, involving bringing the Sanssi back into conversations with other bodies of water around the world.
Now, that you've done outside of here, but documented it and are bringing it. I haven't seen it yet.
No.
Has not.
It's happening tonight.
Tonight. Okay.
Yeah.
Weather depending or somewhere.
Weather depending.
Yeah.
But I think it'll happen.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Now that, tell me what's the, well, first let's start with that Akasha, because that's really pretty to me. I mean, what's the word mean, Akasha?
It's about a kind of universal energy coursing through all things.
Okay.
A sense of continuity and oneness and a kind of sense of energy begetting energy, that kind of fecundity and flow and kind of a wildness too, I suppose, to that energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's represented by how many of those arms are there?
There are five.
There's five of them.
Yeah.
So can you just describe what it is?
So it's made in five, you mean materially?
Yeah, materially and yeah. what you've made.
There are, somebody said something very beautiful about it earlier, and they said they're writhing in the sky, which I thought was really nice.
Writhing in the sky?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose to me they have more of a calm presence than that, but they're sort of very organic, long extensions coming from the earth that are sort of supposed to conjure, when you see them, that sense of growth and ascension and connection. And they are made of fiberglass. So they, in theory, we're going to test this today with this wind.
Yes.
Because they are tall.
Very tall. I mean, like 12 feet tall.
Yeah, more than that, I think.
More, yeah.
It's funny, you know, I because I built them entirely by hand, I have no actual measurements of anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was really a very truly organic way of working and really lovely. And they probably have more relationship to my body than to anything else. Like, what could I lift? They are the absolute maximum weight that I could lift.
Nice.
Things like that, you know, they're kind of, it was like wrangling beasts dealing with them when I was working with them. I have never actually measured it.
Yeah, it's not necessary. Relax, be vague. It's Bombay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, you've got these things. They're fiberglass wrapped around like chicken wire.
Yeah.
Wrapped around these extremely long poles.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really clever the way that you've put them in. You guys dug these like big post holes, cemented in another like receiving post. So you can actually take these things out if the weather is too awful or
in theory I think that that's it.
Great. And so as I'm sitting around, did it take on a different meaning for you, that being able to like drag it out from underneath the trailer and finally put it up, like what do you, when you see it now fully in place, what do you get a sense of something else from it, or what are you feeling?
It's quite hard to talk about, because my wonderful, beautiful, wild mum died a year and a half ago, and that was part of the reason that I haven't been here, combined with COVID and everything else, that's sort of set of circumstances around those things. And I suppose it's interesting, because I set out to make this thing with this very strong sense that it was about hope, because this place, you know, there's so often a sense of hopelessness around environmental disasters and stuff. And I think that, you know, preserving a connection to the beauty and the potential is how you inspire action, right? And so I made this piece in 2020 about hope. And then And then it had to be put to sleep, which is kind of a perfect metaphor, right?
Yeah.
For like losing somebody you love in a horrible way.
Yeah.
You lose hope a little bit when that happens, and you have to accept that hope isn't always enough, right? So to be here and put it up means a kind of a rebirth of a part of myself that I had put to one side for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've found in recent years, losing people I love expectedly and unexpectedly, and I can think about it in the same relation to like this town.
Mm.
There is like a hope in death.
Yeah.
Because it's like the end of this suffering, that even suffering has an end.
Yeah.
All things must pass, that sort of thing. And like when the suffering stops.
Yeah.
It's like...
Yeah.
You don't want to let yourself feel that relief in a way. You like a guilt for relief.
That's true.
I experienced it the first time when I was a child. I was like my grandmother. I was with her for a summer as she was dying. And my mom was looking after her. And that's my mom's job. She's been a hospice palliative care person for her entire life.
Yeah.
And she helped her mother pass with like dignity. And that it was so strange to watch this woman, you know, leave the world, and then the feelings that it made you feel, you know, that connection to death. You suddenly felt really connected to this thing that is, you will meet.
Yeah.
You know, you'll meet it sometime, but to see it in that way and feel kind of hopeful about it was powerful for me. Are you feeling any of that hope yet from it?
I think it's
still too fresh.
What you said about, I think that's, I mean, it's so complex, isn't it? The sense of being very close to something that almost all of society conspires to push away, which is death, is really strange to live with, because you feel like you've become kin to this creature, right? This other part of existence. And it's interesting to think about that in relation to here, which is so often talked about as dying. In terms of the hopeful side of it, I have had moments of just feeling a connection to her spirit without suffering. Yes, in which I've been able to feel almost joyful rather than sad. So there are moments for sure. Yeah.
You showed me photos. We were talking about her the other day, your mom, and you showed me photos of her, and I made note of like how your relationship to those younger images of her.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, I'm one of those people, I pay attention to what people are saying to me, but also pay attention to how they're saying it. And that was one of those things. It's like, okay, this is like, you're in a stage where you can celebrate the person who did it, you know, who was here and who made you and who made the choices and did the things that she did. I know that takes a minute to really get to where it's not like, I mean, of course you're going to always miss. You know, that's missing's one thing, but celebrating in the way you do is, I found that really like sweet and compelling, but also like nice for you that you landed there, you know.
Thank you.
So that's, and I know it's a journey. It's a, you're on it for a while. But a hope in a dying sea is the thing I kind of.
Hope
in a sea of dying.
I think that. The question of whether this place is dying or whether it's just changing is interesting. You know, we see the sea as, you know, toxic and inhospitable. It's actually, you know, host all sorts of life, but
of
just
course.
Not life as we envisage it,
yeah.
you know? And I think, I don't know, it's interesting. I just like, there's this crazy statistic that the mass of man-made material on Earth just began to outweigh the mass of organic material on Earth in its totality. So now more than 50% of things on Earth are man-made. And I was just thinking about dead zones and concrete and, you know, these kind of highly constructed man-made environments that are not actually host to life innately. Like we live in them, but they are not, you know, fecund spaces. Mm-hmm. They're actually quite the opposite.
Yeah.
And here we have this place that is host to so much life, but in a problematic manner. And that's what's interesting.
Problematic,
right?
To us.
Yeah, problematic to us.
Well, there's no change without death. Like, I mean, your body, with the cells in your body are constantly dying, regenerating. Like, the food that you eat is just a onslaught of death, whether you're a vegetarian, vegan or not, you know. So that's the fact that this is dying. It's like a scab peeling off, you know, like new cellular layers are coming and old ones are going. And we're, I mean, like, what are we doing here? What role are we in that biological thing? Are we a bacteria eating at the edges of something that needs to flip over? Are we, you know, are we a microbe in this sense?
We're definitely all feeding off something here.
Yeah.
You know? That's why we're all here.
100%. So when you were putting it up and your initial description of Akasha was like, I got the sense of hope in a number of ways. So I'm glad to hear that your intention behind it was so intentional, but also like it encapsulates your own personal thing.
It really does. Yeah.
That's a layer of depth that's hard to get across in any piece of art, especially without, you know, there's not like a little plaque underneath it that says, you know, oil on canvas 101.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
it's an interesting question with making work always that I think about a lot, because, how much do people need to know the story? How much is it about people's own interpretations? Can you even make something meaningful if you can't communicate the meanings behind it? Does the physical form encapsulate those meanings? It's interesting releasing a piece of work into the world. It just, you have to let go as well when you do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's interesting, I don't know if this is an analogy you probably didn't intend upon, but like you and I've had a number of conversations about like image, the image of a person, the image of being kind of an improbably tall person in the world. And you have a relationship with like your personal beauty. You're a very beautiful woman, and like that, the expectations of people when they see a beautiful person, you know, like you've got this beautiful piece of art out here that at the very least, someone they don't get it. It's like, well, it's real pretty, you know? So there's a funny, and it's like leggy, you know, got this pretty leggy thing that there's a depth to it that you, you will be delighted to receive. Mm. And I almost feel like that in you, like you are this very beautiful leggy lady. And I don't mean this in some dumb, like, chauvinistic way. I mean, just like on the, if you just only see you, that's all you see. Mm. But as the unfolding of your person is, you know, the person around you is gifted with that. It's like, what a treat. You know, you've got so much, and we've only talked about like a tenth of what you do. I mean, you've written poetry, you do photography, you've been in an academic, you know, you've got this whole really rich inner life that no little plaque is going to quite get it, you know. So there's one more parallel between you and your sculpture that,
thank you,
that continues to entice and invite people to enjoy. The conversation with the sea. So you took, because I remember the your first sculpture here, you brought these big bowls of the Pacific and brought Pacific to rejoin the sea. But now you've taken salt and seawater and brought it around, or no?
No, this is a much simpler concept, but it's a piece of work that kind of came together through experimentation. And I just think that it has a nonverbal, it's interesting because it's got a nonverbal impact that is hard to talk about in words, because it's a sensory experience. The pieces of piece of footage, very slow motion footage of a sea surface. It's actually the Bay of Naples. And the audio component is a recording taken of the shoreline of the Salton Sea, of the ripples. Here, there are very interesting noises always, right? There's the wind, there are the coyotes, there's all sorts. But the sea especially has so many personalities, this one.
Yes.
Like, it definitely talks for sure. And this one day, it was just an incredible kind of rippling, playful, very, very deeply soothing sound. And when I paired it with this visual of this incredibly stunning Mediterranean water with the light reflecting off it in these sort of patterns, which look a bit like sort of neuronal patterns when neurons fire and spread, mm-hmm. I sort of thought about how disconnected this feels from that healthy water, right? And how I wanted to bring them back into conversation. That was mm-hmm. it. Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. I love the idea of field recording anything, like just to capture natural sound so you can have it elsewhere. Because we do that with all kinds of things. I mean, like a photograph of a landscape in your house.
Yeah.
You know, is this such a funny thing?
Yeah, it's interesting to think about that. I've also thought with just to, for 1 second to circle back to my mom, you know, I think it's more and more something that's talked about is getting people to record their life histories, but you don't think about the things that you lose. Like you have photos, you have, we have a lot of certain kinds of media of people in our lives. And, but there are some parts like sound, you know, which you sort of think, oh, why wouldn't I have thought of that at the time? Or, but so, and it's also the fact that the sound, the recording from this, the shoreline here captures so many small markers of the place. You know, you can hear, at some point you can hear a train, some point you can hear the wind. It's a very round feeling when you listen to it.
Yeah.
And your brain starts to fill in the gaps, you know?
It really does. Yeah. I've found that with people's voices that that I've met, because we did this traveling, and I've met people that I will probably never see again. We had these intimate moments, right, where we do this, and I go back and I edit, so I spend even more time with them and get to listen in a different way.
Yeah.
It's like a different kind of listening.
Yeah.
And the whole time I'm seeing them.
Yeah.
And it's whatever my brain remembers of them.
Mm.
And it's a lovely thing that it can cause a nostalgia and like an ache sometimes.
Mm.
And to think of the voices that you don't have, you didn't get.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, I have not really ever thought about it in terms of a physical place, and getting the sound of a physical place that may never be the same.
Mm.
I mean, every day, the soundscape of any given place, it's never exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, any 24-hour period, there's going to be variations, you hope.
Yeah.
Because if not, you'll go nuts.
Yeah.
You know, but that's really, that's a wonderful thing. So you've got this audio component, you took wonderful photographs, obviously. And you've kind of created a narrative around it that I think is, I don't know, it's just worth considering, if not on your own or about the Salton Sea, because most of the world doesn't give a shit about the Salton Sea, you know. But it's a way of thinking that I think would be good for anyone, anywhere to think about.
Yeah, and I think that it's the sensory component of it is that obviously if you feel something in your body, that might build a connection, right? And that might inspire a different mode of being or a kind of caring or some, like a kind of a resonance between these bodies of water and our bodies and the obvious truth that we are all completely interdependent and interconnected and any idea otherwise is completely stupid to say, to put it ungently.
Reductive to say the least. Yeah. It doesn't,
So it's really about, I think that's probably a point of connection between all the workers is to try to bring people back into relationship with each other and the world.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, to think of this body of water as having been from a larger body of water that it no longer can connect with. We are also from that larger body of water. I mean, there's a great line in this Bjork song. Your sweat is salty and I am why. She's like singing from the perspective of the ocean.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's really cool tune, Oceana. But you know, that notion that we are from, like all life on the planet is a function of like this moment in ancient, deep history where everything went from like geochemistry to organic chemistry. You know, drying and filling of pools and some mutation giving birth to life.
Mm.
And from those first single-celled organisms to these atoms contemplating atoms, It is all one thing. It's unbearably interconnected.
Do you think that there's any part of us that remembers that?
We think crystals are pretty.
Yeah.
We feel a resonance with crystals, even when we don't believe it.
Mm.
You know, it's hard to say what a memory is, right?
Right, like
what
yeah.
you, that epigenetic memory or your actual memory, your narrative memory. Yeah. Because, I mean, at that point in our evolution, was there narrative? You know, there was, who knows? You know, like what was the language of the atom billions of years ago? Has it evolved? Does it remember?
I mean, I feel like I can sometimes touch something that is a feeling, but it's not a narrative. It's not a,
yeah.
but it is a feeling, right? And
like
I wonder,
familiarity or a...
I don't know. I'm just, it's interesting to think about, you know, has the, like the, how the sensory landscape has changed through time. I suppose like the feeling of existing, right? Yeah. Has that changed or is existence what it is like to be alive?
Yeah. I mean, for any given creature,
you know,
like to watch a bug crawling around.
Mm.
I mean, do you ever do that? Do you ever just like observe an insect wandering around? Or not?
Yeah.
They're not wandering around.
they've got deep intentions.
They've got very life and death circumstances. They're not just out for a stroll, that I can tell.
Mm.
But that's the thing. You can put any given story on it, and you can like imagine what it's like to be that thing. You know?
There was a very beautiful moment last night at the Bombay Beach Opera House where a cockroach walked across the stage in the middle of the most stunning opera performance. And I thought, I don't think this cockroach has any idea, nor should it care.
Oh,
but it was the perfect juxtaposition of our I don't know, artistic reaching.
Yeah.
And the real.
Yeah. The thing that is 24/7 on the job. We're really fortunate to have cockroaches.
Mm.
I know they are like people are like, oh, fucking disgusting.
Mm.
Who else is going to eat that shit? Literally.
Yeah.
You know, like, you need it, you know?
Mm.
And there's a funny, I've often felt like when I've taken strong doses, especially LSD, I've often felt like some sort of animal or insect being observed.
Interesting.
Like I suddenly can feel that thing in me that I'm being observed by something. And I felt a real deep kinship with insects and animals in that moment. And I thought of us here as sort of an insect, doing an insect's job, or like the microbe, you know, we're feeding off this thing and cleaning away debris.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times like sort of showing a scar that was or like a wound that was scabbed, you know.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Composting.
It's composting, yeah.
Mm.
A very unusual form of it, but
yeah.
So were you the only ones who noticed it, or did everybody in the front row notice it?
I'm not sure who did,
just like
but I know
moment.
The people I was with did, and we all smiled because it seems so. It's
perfect.
It's also, yes, you have totally as much right to be here as anyone else.
Of course,
you know, it was. I think it was so interesting to watch the opera singers. We were all so thoroughly blown away by them.
Oh,
and you could see that they could feel that. Uh-huh. And I suppose they don't usually get people four feet away from them cheering. You know, it's not the normal opera decorum. Yeah. And so it was so much joy in that, you know, in seeing that they were getting an experience too by being here in this very different environment.
Yes.
It was truly wonderful, yeah.
You've been a performer. You're a dancer.
Yeah.
And do you play music?
No, I sadly I don't.
But you, I think we talked about that because you have those long hands.
Yeah.
But you've felt that energy, like the change, because you'll practice, rehearse. But then when you actually get up to do it, the energy of the crowd and the way that feels can change your delivery of your performance.
Yeah.
So I love it when you can feel that happening to a performer. That's a gorgeous thing. I got to go see that tonight. I missed it last night.
I sat
here with a shivering, scared, firework frightened little guy. I do kind of want to, if you don't mind, talk about like where you're from.
Okay.
I mean, not just because you have a great accent, but like you've, I mean, we're all shaped by a place, right? And I heard you connect with another person from the UK. Mm. And you both immediately were like, you're from here? I'm from here? And we both got out. You know, like, so can you tell me about where you're from and what, maybe like, what did it do to you? Why did it? Because every place has a potential to want to make someone pop out of it. But where did you come from and why did you want to leave?
I don't think I'd say that I wanted to leave, but I definitely, I had the fortune of having really pretty open and adventurous parents. And so they inspired me to that sort of exploratory mode of living. And in that way, I just wasn't satisfied with what I knew, you know. So I was born on the Isle of Man, which is where my mother's from. A beautiful, rugged, inhospitable island. It's very beautiful. And then it's very wild because it's in the middle of the Irish Sea. And it's interesting in terms of being attracted here. You know, it's a very similar shape and size to the Salton Sea.
Yeah.
So there's this like inversion. We left when I was four. And that was my parents' decision to move to London, which I think this is something that I haven't really ever really understood, because I sort of say to them, well, we were living on the crest of a hill in an old farm building, and with sort of views to the sea, and we moved to an amazing place, but it was the Barbican. It's sort of a brutalist housing project, to a 21st floor apartment, which was stunning, but it must have been such a radical shift for me. Like, from, I used to just take my clothes off and swim in the pond when I was little. Like, I would announce that I was going swimming and sort of walk down to the bottom of the garden and go and swim.
Wow.
Like, so, and I wonder if my innate desire to kind of break free or to return to some kind of wilder space comes from that. Because I definitely find city living to be super fun and stimulating and incredibly rich, but I miss so desperately the feeling of being small in a big space.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though cities are big, I don't feel that way there. Yeah. I don't feel, oh God, what is it? It's almost like you get held. And I know the wilderness can be inhospitable, but it can also be somewhere where you feel connected and held and free.
Yeah. And when you're in a city and surrounded by people, you're not a single organism. You're part of a macro organism with many, you know, like a hive.
Mm.
You're more part of a big hive that has like kind of a overarching job to keep that city running, you know. But whereas when you're in the country or more rural spaces, your hive is much smaller and the jobs are much more diffuse. And like, I know it, that feeling well of feeling your size in the, cause you know, at night in the city, it's hard.
I agree.
It's hard. Yeah.
Sorry. We agree.
Good job, Pele. Pele's feeling his size right now.
Yes,
he's enormous. Good job, buddy. Good job. Sorry, I don't normally have that back door open.
That's fine.
But yeah, in the country and in the rural setting, you can see the night sky.
Mm.
And there's almost nothing better than giving you a sense of perspective.
Mm.
It's like too much, you know, to feel that tiny.
Mm.
You know, so somewhere between the, you know, the infinitesimally small and, you know, just the 6 feet that's you.
Yeah.
You get this like sense of, all right, okay. I'm not so big. I've had a good time in cities, but I prefer being able to be somewhere where I can not be around so the big hive.
I think it's also about the way you engage with the place. So, you know, the demands, especially of somewhere here, like here in Bombay Beach, but the demands of daily life, they become your life, right? So here, you have to be engaged in the community in order to survive, number one.
Number one, yeah. Of course.
And then you have to deal with, you know, the environmental factors, the wind, the heat, this is a deeper connection, right? In a way, to something bigger than ourselves. Automatically, the demands on you are to connect and to deal with the external.
Yeah.
And I think for some people, that, especially if you might think too much or be, you know, in any way sort of prone to that kind of introversion, the being the kind of demands can be helpful, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting here. Like, I came here on purpose.
Mm.
I took my van with expendable income and came down here to do a thing, and then I'm going to leave, you know? And, you know, there's a survivalist thing. There's a lot that I have to, like, you have to deal with here, just like anyone else, but I'm going to leave.
Mm.
I'm going to back up and go.
Mm.
And I'm going to go back to my cushy little place elsewhere. And there's a large enough number of people here that ain't the case.
Yeah.
They don't have any expendable income. They don't have anywhere else to go. And there's some of them are quite happy to be here. It's not like they just feel trapped here by the world.
Mm.
But there is like that's the, those are the survivalists.
Yes.
Like those are the ones who are really putting in the hours. So it's really cool to be here, but I also always have this funny sense of, I don't know if guilt is the right word. But it's like we were talking about size and perspective and space and place.
Mm.
I have this other notion of like belonging,
you
know, that I know, like I can fit into this lock, but it is not my, I'm not the key. You know what I mean?
But I think you've just encapsulated it perfectly in terms of the mentality that I feel is the route through perhaps some of the guilt, because I completely agree with you. There's a massive contrast between the local community here and the people who come in and do this. And the connection was to behave and act as if you're a guest in someone else's space.
Right.
Right. Which is what we are, no?
Like very decorative guests.
Yeah. But I mean, of course, within, you wouldn't go in and decorate someone's house, but there is an element of consciousness in terms of what you are leaving here. Can you truly say that you're leaving that with the intention of it bringing joy, beauty, hope, something positive, right?
Yeah.
If that isn't there, then you've got to ask yourself why you're doing it, right? Because there, as you say, there is a community of people here who are living with us and with all the things that we bring with us.
Yeah.
So I think you just have to keep in your heart the conscious intention to do some good if you can.
Right.
Right.
No, I think it's fair. And I think it's like, the reason I bring it up wasn't just to harp on the guilt I feel here, because I'm not from where I live either.
Mm.
And neither are you, right?
Yeah.
You don't live where you're from. You live elsewhere.
Yeah.
And if you're doing things with heart and being like self-aware and, you know, community aware, I mean, maybe you're living that way everywhere. Because I'm an interloper. I'm from Mississippi and Tennessee, and I live in Marin County, this like very kind of fancy place. And I'm not very dialed into my community, but I do really appreciate what the place is, and I would never do anything to harm it. And if I ever leave anything behind, it's a thing that will improve the life of someone.
Yeah.
If not everyone that got a chance to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good ethic. This is just like a macrocosm or microcosm of that thing that you can like really feel the impact almost immediately. Because someone will drive by while you're building a thing and be like, what the hell is this going to be? And you have to explain it, you know?
Yeah.
And those are cool interactions. So
yeah.
It's like you don't have that like long delayed response time on your impact on a place, you know?
You get quick feedback.
Very quick feedback. Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so you left London.
I got a scholarship to go and do a PhD at University of California, San Diego, when I was 21. I was quite young, and it was very prestigious and brilliant and exciting. And I ended up not following the academic path because it wasn't the right fit for me. But that was the big move, was from London to San Diego. I actually sort of between LA and San Diego, but it was brilliant and tough.
I bet.
Like, you know, it was hard to because I didn't have family or really, I didn't do much due diligence, and that's probably my fault, but it's interesting. I think everyone was just so excited that I'd got such a prestigious offer. that I'm not sure I really thought hard enough about whether it was the right thing, or even if I knew myself well enough at that. The other question is, at that age, do you really, you just go through these paths where you unfold and you have to have those realizations, don't you? So I moved to California, but that's why I'm here now. So that is a beautiful, a kind of, the part of it that has continued has been the relationship with this place.
I love that. It's a beautiful thing to show up in California for the first time.
Yeah.
It really is.
Do you remember when you, what was that like?
Well, the first time I came, I was a little boy. I came on a vacation. And my oldest sister ran away here.
Oh, wow.
When she was 16. So it was very romanticized to me, as this, like, you know, rock and roll was possible here, and fame, and, you know, I just had that notion of, like, palm trees, the beach.
Yeah.
When I got out here, you know, like, with my dad and I think my mom, you know, the Universal Studios, it was that Disney kind of, like, you know, here's where the movies you like were made and all this sort of stuff. It had its own little thing, right? So that implanted on me. But then as a young man, 22 years old, my father had just died. My girlfriend, who's now my wife, she and I split up and she moved out of the house, and I was robbed. Everything I owned was stolen. And I got an offer to come hike on the Pacific Crest Trail, which goes from the Mexican border to the Canadian border, all through, like, California, Oregon, and Washington, through the desert. And I became aware of the Salton Sea at that time. And I was like, there's an inland sea? I really wanted to see it. But arriving to San Diego to begin my journey there was, like, my first real coming to California as a man, as a person with, you know, agency and a little bit of cash, and I could make my own choices. And it was very impactful to me to be out here and feel this sense of possibility here. And knowing that, like, how many little countries are in California, you know, that I would hike through desert, alpine, snow. I mean, I was completely dehydrated, and then 2 days later was freezing on a mountain, you know, and then I would be walking through all these different varied forests and be near all these different kinds of cities.
Yeah.
It was like, it was mind blowing me to come out here for the first time. I'll never forget the impact of really trying to get a sense of a bite of California.
Yeah. It sounds like you were probably also processing
a lot.
Right. So I think it's so hard to, maybe it's not hard to verbalize, but, like, how do you relate the emotional processing to the physical environment? Like, what is it about certain spaces that allow us? Because that is obviously as well a huge part of what's happening here. Mm-hmm. Like, so many people come here, whether consciously or subconsciously, but they are, we are all always processing something, right? But this sense of healing, or the potential for things to get better, is, I think, a huge part of why we all do this.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think is about certain spaces that allow people to have those experiences?
I don't know, man. Just thinking as you were saying that about, do you remember Willy Wonka, the movie, the original? He had a wallpaper that no matter where you licked it, you got a different flavor. It's that. The potential to have a different experience depending on where you go and what that space says to you and what that place does to you. Like, that's why I like to travel. You know, because it's all common. There are walls and there are people and there are needs. But, like, to be in someone's space in El Salvador is very different than being in someone's space in, you know, Northern Oregon. You know, there's just, like, a qualitative cultural difference in spite of all the sameness. You know, there's just things that the gravity's on all the time. The food gets digested. But that, like,
it's difference. Yeah.
Those differences make life so, I don't know. I mean, like, you're, I say this too much, but you will be dead forever. Forever. There was billions of years of you not existing and hopefully many billion more of you not. And there's this little window of time where you can kind of make, to the best of your ability, your story happened.
Yeah.
And I like characters a lot. And you know what better way to get involved with a multitude of characters than going to different spaces and trying their food and letting them try yours. Mm. So that to me is it. You know, it's licking the different parts of the wall.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about that in terms of like neural plasticity and this, like, what is healing, right? Mm. Like, it's the ability to think new thoughts, different thoughts, to not be stuck in a singular space of suffering. And I'm just thinking about what you're saying about difference and why people here want to throw themselves into an environment that is so different. It's because it, by its very nature, will make you think differently.
Yeah.
You know, that's what these spaces do, mm-hmm. because of the physical space. And you don't even really have to bring willingness. I mean, you have to be willing to come here, but the place will work on you.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so important about wilderness and untamed
totally
landscapes and all of the things that we're in danger of losing is the way that they work on you.
Yeah.
You know, the conversation.
Yeah. And this space is like accelerated humanity. It's like you're seeing a fast forward of what could happen in a way.
It
like exposes all the really dumb choices we made that we thought were a good idea.
Mm.
Like building a yacht club. And it's, you know, like burying a town behind a berm so it can't see the sea that's in front of it. Because, you know, like there's just so much wild absurdity here that like shines a spotlight on other generations' bad choices.
Mm.
Not having looked forward far enough and like really done the calculus.
Mm.
You're sitting in it, you know, and like we're also sitting in it in our daily lives.
Mm.
We're watching it unfold. We're making those choices. We're planting those flags. We're doing those things that future generations will be like, oh my God, can you believe they used to do that?
Yeah.
You know? So it's a funny place to be that this place in particular, Bombay Beach, really challenges that. Like, or how self-aware are you?
Yeah.
How good a neighbor are you when you're not here?
Yeah.
Are you this good?
Yeah.
You know, are you going to do this to the future?
Mm.
Are you, is there anything you can maybe do? I definitely feel a sense of hopelessness when I worked in the environmental field for a long time and it was hard to remain hopeful, you know? I mean, I certainly was never optimistic. Hope is a different thing from optimism, but my hope for the world is that like everybody has as much good as they can.
Mm.
And you know that that falls apart every second for so many people on the planet. And, you know, this place just reminds me of the importance of being like compassionate and kind and paying attention, you know?
Yeah, I think that there's a real, I mean, I've really felt it here, this, the paying attention, the willingness to give someone the space that they need to be themselves and to sort of, I don't know, there is a sense of care and care and understanding. It sounds cliche, but it's true. Yeah.
I mean, I heard once, you know, Sheryl Crow is?
Like, yes.
Somebody was like, you know, God, songs about peace and love. I mean, God, hasn't it been done? They were giving a hard time. She's like, yeah, but is it fixed?
Are we going to?
Is everybody doing that? Is that what you're saying? Like that we don't need it anymore because we're all doing it? It's like, no, of course not. Like, I'll keep singing about peace and love and until it's not an interesting topic.
Yeah.
I always liked that about her. I saw her play once at a festival and she was talking about how much food she didn't. She's like talking about her belly and how full her belly was. Like, that's a cool person, man.
Because
you're supposed to be this like sexy symbol. She's like, I ate too much barbecue. I'm just, it was great.
It's interesting. The, Sheryl Crow connection, this sort of Americana that we grew up with, like you with your Californian idol and ours was obviously in the UK, a big part of it was American music. Mm-hmm. So I had Sheryl Crow CD, which I would listen to on the, and now I think about it, it seems so like grungy, like, you know, on the tube, which I had to take to school. So, you know, the metro in America. Mm-hmm. And I'd listened to my Sheryl Crow CD, yeah, and it was like almost exactly the length. So it was quite a long journey I had to do. And I'd be like walking to school in the rain and listening to Sheryl Crow and thinking, fuck, I just like love this woman.
Yeah.
And like want everything that this is, yes, you know? Yeah. So
well, you're wearing, yeah, kind of a Sheryl Crow shirt right now. You've got on the cool button down jean, pearl snaps even.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't grow out of that one.
No. No, I still think she's cool.
Yeah.
So you've moved many places. You've lived around the world, would you say? Or
well,
between the UK, US, and now
Italy.
In Europe, you're in Italy.
Yeah.
How long have you been in Rome?
I've been in Rome for 6 months, and I was in Naples before that.
Okay.
Interrupted by COVID and all sorts of other things. Yeah.
How's your Italian?
Bene.
Nice. Si. Well done.
Yeah, it's good.
Do you speak Spanish as well?
No, and I speak sort of Spanish Italian when I'm in Spain, which is, and it's I'm not. I wish I did pick up Italian quite easily, and I really love speaking it. I think different people's mouths have different affinities, you know, for different languages. Mm-hmm. Do you speak Spanish?
Poco.
See, I mean, yeah, I can get by, but then I hit the wall very quickly.
I can understand way more than I can say. As a little boy, my our babysitter was from Colombia, and she would talk Spanish all day, so evidently at some point when I was really little, I could speak Spanish,
yeah,
sort of, you know, like I had an understanding of it that is somehow imprinted in me. And we took a long journey and like spent 2 months taking classes just in various places. 2 months, anyway, we took a bunch of classes. And then you're just in the street, you know, you're in it all day.
Yeah.
So the people ask you, where'd you learn? Like in La Calle, in the street. Yeah. You know, like that to me is like where you pick up your understanding. And now the majority of my Spanish engagement is like building things with people, because it's all Hispanic guys. And many of them don't speak any English at all. And when they tell you these crazy stories of getting to the US, fucking harrowing journey.
Well, we're right here.
And then to see them up where I live in this really expensive, super nice place, like 10 dudes living in a single place, eating eggs, beans, and rice for every meal every day, and sending most of their money home.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how, sorry.
No, but I mean, it's very California relevant, right? Oh, the Californian entire economy relies on a immigrant workforce. So
are you seeing in Italy now? Are you seeing like African migrants?
Yeah, I mean, it's that's I don't want to say that's a problem. It's a political problem.
Sure.
Right.
Right. Are you gonna learn to speak Senegalese? Like,
God, I'd love to. I think it would be just one of the best things you do for your brain, you know, just to keep learning languages. Because
it does challenge you.
Well, it completely, it breaks the map you build with a language, and it opens up spaces that are not otherwise there. Yeah. And I think it like genuinely expands your minds. And I would love to learn more languages. In fact, maybe after this, I will commit to it.
Commit to it?
Yeah.
All right. We'll check in 6 months and see. My niece learned Mandarin, and she's like 21 and speaks Mandarin. She's from Mississippi.
Wow.
Like, what
so
the hell?
Cool. Yeah.
I really wish she could meet you, because you guys have she's very tall and she's very interesting, super smart young woman. I don't know. I almost feel like you could be like sort of a mentor and like help explain some things that she may be going through. I'm such a fan of hers, and I'm a fan of yours.
Thank you.
I think you're really cool. I really like what you've done, and your approach to problem solving is hilarious. You are not shy at all in any sense, but certainly with like, when you have an idea, you are committed to that idea and ready to go for it. And I love that.
Thank you.
I think it makes for very fun. You and Gallo and I have worked on some little things that were just so, the project itself was like secondary to the process of doing it. The thing that I really enjoyed, like, this thing now works fine. But the bit that I liked was that little triangle of interaction that was just so fun.
Yeah.
So thanks for enriching my experience in that way.
Thank you for your help.
Yeah. So what's next for you? Where are you heading after this?
I'm headed back to Rome, which is it's going to be a crazy transition.
But
a really beautiful one. I'm so happy to be there. And that we're actually moving house. So when I get back, it's the end of the month. So then we've got the new rental starting. So I'll be moving boxes. So it's good that I've got my Bombay strength by being here. Yeah, I've done quite a lot of heavy lifting already.
Yeah, if you catch a splinter there, I'll be surprised.
I mean, you won't see them because I've got so many anyway. Yeah. And then who knows? But me and my partner William, we're really enjoying just having a home back in Italy. We had such a long break from that. Yeah. So daily life is pretty enjoyable for us at the moment. Just, market shopping and all the things that you can do there.
I can't wait to see my wife. And I've only been away a week. To get back.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you the very best.
Thank you.
I hope we stay in touch. If next time you're back in California.
Yes.
Say hello.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Mother Ocean.